It's a bright, sunny day in West London. I'm Gab, he's Jules. It's the Gab and Jules Show. Full slate of Premier League games this weekend. Yeah. Barcelona with a wild one. Juventus, Cristiano scoring two goals. Plenty to get into. But let's start at the top. Let's start with the fact that Liverpool drop points again, lose consecutive home games for the first time in yonks. And to help us sort through it, let's go to Don Hutchinson. Don, welcome aboard. Easy question. Klopp said afterwards that they look, you know, he's asked, well, why are you so bad? Not in those words, because they were really poor, I thought. And he said mental fatigue, translating into physical fatigue. Is it as simple as that?
I think so, mate, and a lack of confidence. You can see in the average positions when you look at Andy Robertson and you look at Trent Alexander-Arnold, when Liverpool were flying and they were confident and they had, you know, fit centre-halves, first-class centre-halves, they were high up the pitch. Now they're sort of protecting Nat Phillips and Jordan Henderson, so everything's gone a little bit cagey. And I think more mental fatigue, Gab and Jules, I think when you look at Liverpool and what they've done over the last two or three years, you know, the front three, when you pick Liverpool's best 11 and everyone's fit, these guys have been playing together for an awful long time. And now you look at Man City at any given time, they can chop and change four or five players. Liverpool simply can't do that. They've got a squad of 11 that can beat anyone in European football. You might be able to stretch that to 12 to 13 players. Apart from that, you're looking at youngsters, and I just think it's mental burnout.
I got to stick up for Klopp a little bit, because we're so used to all the absentees and all the injuries. Yeah. And I think this is a legit mitigating factor, because if they'd been fit, he not only would he have better players on the pitch. I mean, the quick reality, Virgil van Dijk, Alisson, Gomez, Joao Matip, Jota,
Mane,
Firmino not fully fit, Keita, who, whatever, you know, is Keita, but he's another body. It means you're not force-fed James Milner. This isn't just whinging, right? This is legit. Yeah. You can't spot 6, 7, 8 players to the opposition.
It's all the injuries they didn't have in the last 3 years that all come at once in the same season. That's it. They've been very lucky, especially that front three and all the key players, to be okay for the last 3 years when they were amazing. And then this season, it's just the complete opposite. It's the complete extreme. And I think you can see it with take away the four best players of any team, well, you know, pretty much, let's say, the three best players in any teams, in any top teams in Europe, and they will struggle. They will struggle, especially when they play every 3 days, and especially when they play such a demanding style of football.
Let me guess, your three best players are Van Dijk, Alisson, and Mane. Those are the three you're talking about?
Exactly.
Don, there were some individual things, because in the end, you know, we talk about more broadly, and they were poor, I think, as a group. Equally, we saw Salah, one of Liverpool's few chances, had a miss early on, and then he had a miss in the second half as well. I mean, he did score two goals in the last game. We thought, oh, here's a bit of a turnaround. But then you wonder if that was a false dawn. And equally, Trent Alexander-Arnold, who'd been one of their most consistent performers, he's had a couple good games recently, but overall, this is a very poor season.
Yeah,
and I can't help but wonder, Dan Byrne is 6'20". How did he lose him so many times?
Well, it's difficult, because when you ask to try and get up and down that pitch, you've got to try and get forward, you've got to try and get touch tight to markers. Dan Byrne, as you said, is 6'6", one of the tallest wing-backs in the league, brilliant in the air. And yes, he lost him, but I'd like to take the move all the way back to when Brighton started their move, and they passed the ball ridiculously well. They scored a Man City goal, if you like. They played into the lines, they played into midfield, a little flick for, I think, Trossard, little Cruyff flick, and then they worked it into wide. Solly March, put a great cross in. The finish was probably the scruffiest part of the move, but Brighton deserved the win. The best team for sure won.
You're too kind. You're too kind on Alexander-Arnold. I'm sorry. This is the basics, Don. This is the basic of a fullback at any level. What do you do when...
You say basics, old Jews. The basics are, if Trent Alexander-Arnold's 6 foot and someone's 6'6", there's a chance he's going to win the ball in the air, isn't there?
No, but he's not there to challenge the ball. He loses him.
The point is that he doesn't even know he's behind him. He doesn't even know that behind him there's a Brighton player. He could be 3 foot or 7 foot. He doesn't even know there's someone behind, because he never checks. He never looks. And he does that. He's done it all season. And that's what I mean by basic. When you're in the box, you're a fullback or even a centre back, you have to look around. You know that better than us.
Don,
I don't understand what's going on.
I'm just wondering. I
got Andy Robertson, but stopping the cross.
Well, I think Robertson has had his issues too. He's not been good either.
No.
Let's not forget. But I just want to add on, from your perspective as an ex-player, I mean, and maybe I'm defending Alexander-Arnold here. Is this also on the center halves who need to tell Trent what's behind him, what's around him, bring him back into line? And instead, you know, they have Nat Phillips, who I'm sure is a very nice man, but isn't on a par with Virgil van Dijk and Henderson, who is a great leader, but is obviously not a central defender. Does that come into it? Or do you think that's a bit of making an excuse for fullbacks there?
No, I don't think it's making an excuse. I think Trent, as Joel said, is a little bit guilty, but I think there were so many players guilty in the move because they could have stopped it at source. I mean, as I said before, taking the move all the way back, and they played fantastic football, and Liverpool tried to press them, but got nowhere near them. Andy Robertson then doesn't stop the cross. I think what it is, it's hard in real time. It's easy when you look at the goal and you think, right, ball coming to the box. Maybe Nat Phillips could have switched his position and Trent could have been a centre-half. When everything's happening live, it's very difficult to try and pass information on and change positions, especially when Trossard's making runs to the middle. And credit Brighton, by the way. Every time they did put a cross in the box, it wasn't just Trossard, it wasn't just Morpay, it was Dan Burn. They were getting midfield runners like Pascal Gross, Yves Bissouma. They were committing bodies forward for fun. 1-0 actually flattered Liverpool. It could have been a lot more.
Yeah, I got to say this, Jules. I mean, Graham Potter, he came over, he's had such an unusual path to the Premier League. You know, he doesn't look necessarily like a manager. He looks more just like a bloke.
Yeah.
But I think this guy's absolutely brilliant. I think Brighton should have many more points on the table than they've had. Brighton have also been hit really, really hard by injuries. Not now so much, but earlier in the season. That he's not going to be manager of the year, but he can operate at a higher level, right?
Oh, definitely. And we've said before in the season that they XG, for example, and all their stats are much better than what the results were.
What strikes me about Brighton is, you know, when you can look at this, is that they manage to both play pretty football, and it is pretty intelligent, coordinated football, and also have a bunch of big dudes at the back to kind of be comfortable when they need to shut up shop and defend deep and defend.
Yeah, they've conceded, apart from the last two games against Liverpool and Spurs, which is quite the paradox, but they've conceded goals before and chances as well.
No, I'm not saying that's why they're near relegation.
But they're not the most solid teams in the league at all.
No, I'm not suggesting that. But what I'm saying is it's this dichotomy to the team, right? I mean, Webster, Donk,
White.
Right. White, I put a different category. I mean, Don, help me out here. I think Ben White is a really, really good footballer who could play at a higher level.
So is Burns.
I don't think Dan Burn, Lewis Donk, and Webster. You know, I think mid-table Premier League, I think that is their level as starters. Am I wrong here?
I don't think you're wrong, but I think if you stick all those plays together, it just works, doesn't it? You know, there's no top four side, apart from really Ben White, that would take any of the three centre-halves. But at the same time, when you ask them to man up, and you ask them to play in a system, and you ask them to head balls away and put their bodies on the line, I thought Adam Webster was terrific last night. He wasn't the only one. And then can you improve them as footballers? Chrissy Hughton didn't really improve Lewis Dunk as a footballer. I think Graham Potter has. I think he's given more confidence. He's worked on his technical ability. And then they play into midfield. They've got boys who can handle the ball. They absolutely ripped Tottenham to shreds, not in terms of the scoreline, but they battered them midweek. And they give Liverpool a little bit of a lesson. They weren't as good, I didn't think, but I think they respected the champions and they knew they couldn't give them too many chances. But as away performances go, I thought Brighton were terrific. And 1-0 flattered Liverpool. I thought Brighton could have scored two or three more. But I think it's the group. I think if you put Graham Potter, as much work as he does and the effort and the time that he puts on the training ground improving all these players, who some of them look uncomfortable. Dan Burn, 6'6". When have you seen a wingback who gets up and down as much as Dan Burn and struggles for sort of fitness? He looks knackered every single minute, but he keeps going to the well. And I think that's what they do. They just play as a real team that want to win games and want to put their bodies on the line.
Do you remember when they went to City? I think it was maybe 3 weeks ago, and they lost 1-0, and they had six centre backs. If you count them all, with White and Webster and Veltman as well, and all of them. And we did say, okay, they played with no strikers. If you remember, there was no Mopay. I think Trossard maybe played at the first number 9 or McAllister. And yet they found a way of still causing trouble to City. City found it really difficult. They played well with the ball, and I just think he also has that flexibility where he goes to Liverpool in a different setup, because the formation was arguably the same, but in a different setup with a different plan than when he went to City, and then when they host Tottenham, it's a bit different again. I just think he's a brilliant manager.
They were one of the very few teams, Brighton, I'm not sure if it was this season or last season, but they had actually more possession than Man City.
That's the thing. They're very comfortable without the ball, but they're also really comfortable on the ball. And when they break, it's not just lump it into the corner for the fast guy to chase. Liverpool fans, we will get to more Liverpool chat, but I just want to ask you a question, Don, because, all right, to both of you, I don't follow the lower divisions in England at all. What I'm interested in, and you hear the fact that there are actually good English coaches in the lower divisions, but they're not given a chance, right? Graham Potter is somebody who is a very good English coach. He went abroad. He went to Scandinavia, where obviously there's a lot of people who speak English. Maybe it's easier to integrate. Don, what's your view on that? Like, if Graham Potter had stayed here in England, would he spent the rest of his life managing teams like Chorley in the Ryman League?
He was in the Championship. You know, it was
before he went to Scandinavia?
No, after.
Oh, that's what I mean.
Still went from the Championship to the Premier League.
No, I understand that. But I'm saying is he would have never had a shot in the Championship if he hadn't gone to Scandinavia to build his career. Maybe. The same way Roy Hodgson would have never become England manager if he hadn't gone abroad all those years. What's your take on that, Don?
Hard one, Gab. I think what happens to young English coaches, and not just English coaches, it might happen in Europe as well. I think once they start managing and get on the coaching ladder and start in League Two and League One, and it's very unlikely that they're going to succeed. And I mean, when I'm talking succeeding, it's winning leagues and getting promotion and going right through the divisions. It hardly happens. So they tend to sort of struggle. They're feeling the way in their own coaching ability. They've got limited players to work with. So therefore, if they do lose their job very early on, I think the chances of them getting employed by a higher division club is really, really unlikely. No one's going to get sacked from League Two and get a Championship job. That's never going to happen. So when you spend your life, I would imagine, League One, League Two, and just sort of drifting, sometimes you might just think, well, I need a change of culture. I need a change. I need to go and win some trophies. I need to go and, you know, have the freedom to try.
But it's not something you see very often. And I mean, the reason I'm asking you is because your peers, guys you played with, I'm not suggesting you're old by any stretch, but obviously you've retired. You played with, you know, many of them have now gone into coaching. Some have done well, some have not done so well. And I'm just wondering, we still see very few who take the route that Graham Potter took. You know, we see other situations where, like, when Alan Pardew and McLaren went abroad, when they were already famous here and they were a brand and then they went abroad. But seeing no names leave England to try and make it abroad, that's not something that's common, is it?
No, it's not. A good friend of mine tried it, Brian Dean. I think he managed out in Scandinavia as well, and it worked for him. But then coming back to England, he couldn't then find himself in a manager's job. I don't know, Gab. Maybe there's so many young managers and so many managers trying to get on the ladder, trying to get a job. There's just not enough jobs for them. So they have to then go abroad and think, right, what can I do? You know, look at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He had to go abroad once he left Cardiff. You know, sometimes if there's no jobs available in England, you have to then go abroad just to stay on the ladder, try and win some trophies, build yourself confidence back up again. Then you're hoping you might get a job back in the Championship or the Premier League.
All right, let's cycle it back to Liverpool. We are second guessing here, and I don't super feel comfortable. Like, I mean, I'm showing my bias because I like Klopp and I think he's a good manager. We can go back, and we're playing Monday morning quarterback here. If they'd had a normal amount of injuries this season, we can all agree they'd be better off. So does it mean that Klopp really can't do any better with what he has?
No, I still think he's made mistakes along the way. I don't understand why Curtis Jones doesn't start the game against Brighton. It makes no sense for me.
Because he didn't start the game before either. He came on.
He came on against West Ham, and we saw the James Milner sort of club incident where Milner is like, why are you taking me off?
But you know it's Milner, so he said it in a very kind,
still,
gentle way.
Still. And then Curtis Jones is the difference maker in that game. And then after that, you put him back on the bench, where you clearly lack so much creativity in that game. One shot on target against Brighton, and he only comes on for the last 10 minutes. And I'm like, why? Why are you doing? You know, why are you doing that? Why can't you see that Curtis Jones is on a good dynamic after the West Ham game? He brings you something different that you don't really have. He can play instead of Shaqiri, even if you start him wide, and then he will come inside a lot and get on the ball and create and take on players, and that Shaqiri doesn't do anymore.
Or even, frankly, Wijnaldum and Milner. At some point, Wijnaldum has to take a break as well.
Yeah,
Milner's older. Don, I looked at the bench, and the guys who came on, and according from memory, it's Oxlade-Chamberlain, Jones, and Origi. Everybody else, they're all eyeball. It was Davies, and then it was, you know, the Williams brothers, who aren't really brothers. Yeah, and I know there's some dude I'd never heard of, Kane or whoever the hell that is. I mean, you're really stretched. If you're Curtis Jones, if you say, man, we have all these injuries.
Yeah.
And I still can't get a start two games in a row against teams that we should be beating. Does that play on your mind?
Yeah, you'd be frustrated. I think it's a similar sort of situation than Phil Foden a couple of years back, or 18 months back, when we all thought and Pep told the world he's the best young player he's ever worked with, but he couldn't necessarily get game time. I think Jurgen Klopp's just trying to get his best 11 on the pitch. I agree with Jules, injuries has killed Liverpool. It doesn't take a genius to work out if you put Liverpool's best 11, they'll give anyone a game and they'll have a chance of winning the Premier League again. I just look at the bigger picture and I just think a lot of these players now have gone to the well so many times. I think a lot of them are absolutely shot to bits. I don't think Firmino's as sharp. I mean, the strange thing is Mo Salah's top on the chart in terms of his goal scoring, but he's been awful. Apart from a couple of worldly goals against West Ham, his performances drive you crazy when you watch him. And I think that's what Jurgen Klopp was alluding to last night when he was saying some of my players couldn't pass from A to B. There were so many times Mo Salah had the ball and he had a simple 10, 15-yard pass to his left or to his right and he kept giving the ball away. And that wasn't just last night. That's been happening for a long time.
All right. So how do we fix this? So I'm assuming it's important that Henderson goes back to midfield just for his leadership and whatever. I know people are like, oh, look, he did so well at the back. It's fine, but I don't. He doesn't give you any value added, right? Sorry?
He did okay.
He did okay. So can this guy Davies, can he step in and play at the back?
The problem
can Kabak play at the back?
The problem is the next game is Manchester City. And again, you know, do you give your debut to Kabak or Davies at the back? Or even do you play Rhys Williams
don't,
and Phillips?
Don't. Stop it. Rhys Williams and Phillips
in 2 weeks'
at the back.
Time, in 11 days, you've got Leipzig in the Champions League.
Don, what happens? Help me out here. What happens against City?
Who do you start?
What does Klopp do? The game is in 3 days, I mean, as we record this. And if you lose this, then you're a million points back.
Yeah. If you lose this, it's over.
And then the best you can do is hang on to finish top four, yeah? The league is over?
Yeah, Liverpool are not in a title race. I don't think they are. I really don't think they are. I think it's the hope that kills you. When they won two on the spin against Tottenham and West Ham, you thought, well, they'll beat Brighton, go into the City game. It gives them a bit of confidence. The trouble is, as we just said, the injuries are killing them. And it's not the fact that Liverpool are poor at the back. It's the knock-on effect when you take Fabinho and Jordan Henderson out of midfield. You know, if you think about it, if you try and put Thiago in midfield with Jordan Henderson and Fabinho, you're talking about arguably the best three in Europe. People might argue Bayern Munich, that's absolutely fine. But there's a debate. Yeah. There's a debate to be had. But when you take those two players out of central midfield, and they're well capable of playing at the back, no, it's not at the back that's the problem. It's the injuries at the back and the knock-on effect of putting midfield players in there. And then, you know, you've got to hope and pray that Mane's back. You've got to hope and pray that Fabinho's back, because if he's back, he'll play centre-half. But he's got real problems. And I'm just stunned, and we had the conversation a couple of weeks ago about Liverpool with their finances and no money. I don't know why you would sign Ben Davies for £2 million and potentially spend £18 million on Kabak, when you could just spend a little bit more and go and get one of Europe's finest. Go and get one of the finest and just have him playing alongside Nat Phillips or Fabinho or Jordan Henderson till Van Dijk comes back. And then you've got a world-class partnership next season.
I think the argument is, well, A, the finances are still really, really difficult cash-wise, as we said last time. But I think
at some point, they've got to shell out £18 million for Kabak. So at some point, they're going to have to shell out that money.
Well, not necessarily, because they may not keep Kabak if they don't like him. And also the other thing is, with these loans with option to buy, where there's no preset fee, or where there is a preset fee, you can still go back to the club and be like, oh, yeah, I know it says 18 million, but give him to us for 10 million, right? And Kabak says, oh, I'm not going back. And then, you know, they there's always ways around that. I think the answer, though, I mean, I like the idea of a veteran center half. I don't think, though, I wouldn't think of getting one of Europe's finest. I just get somebody experienced, right? I mean, we mentioned Sokratis, whatever. You don't like Sokratis, get somebody else.
Yeah.
But I think the difficulty is, if you're going to spend 25, 30 million for somebody who has a future, you're going to say, well, do I want to go there? Because what happens next season when it's Van Dijk and it's Gomez and they're fit again And why would I? Well, why would I want to do that, right? I think it's actually really difficult. And then you got to pay more, or you have to give him a bigger contract to show that you're committed to him. It's hard to find that sweet spot of somebody who fits that bill. But you're right. With hindsight, you know, maybe that's what they should have done. Don, thank you so much.
Cheers, Gab. Cheers, Jules.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough Liverpool. Let's talk Coppa Italia. First leg semi-final, Inter against Juventus. Jules, Inter take the lead, and they can't hang on to the lead. Not good.
And it's not the first time, but two huge mistakes, really. The first one, Ashley Young. Did he really think there was no better way of defending on Cuadrado on that cross?
What, than like holding his hand and pulling him back? Antonio Conte came out and he said, we gifted them two goals.
Yeah.
And Ashley Young made a mental error. But I hope in this small way, this goes back to this notion, this obsessive fetish that Conte and others have for experience, winning mentality, battle hard. I'm not having to go to Ashley Young. Ashley Young has all those things. And he made a stupid mistake. He made a stupid...
Not as bad as the mistake for the second goal, right?
Well, but then we can talk about Bastoni's inexperience and blame it on that.
Yeah, but Handanovic has to shout or scream or cry or sing or I don't know, anything.
Yeah.
To avoid that misunderstanding. And then Cristiano, who's obviously so intelligent and can sense those occasions.
And by the way, Cristiano has wheels too once he gets going because he doesn't just get in there, but just how quickly he goes around.
Yeah.
Tremendous finish. Cristiano, of course, also converted the penalty there.
It's two goals for him.
And this was after a period when he'd been a little bit quieter. Mm. There's an interesting piece in Gazzetta about the relationship between Cristiano and Pirlo. Obviously, nobody in the world likes getting substituted. And there have been a few times when Cristiano's grumbled a bit when he's been substituted.
Yeah, we saw it with Sarri when he even went straight into the dressing room.
But it's different now with Pirlo. And they suggest that fundamentally footballers, you know, obviously they respect great managers, but they also respect managers who've been great footballers.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And they argue that Pirlo has the gravitas of the ex-player.
Yeah.
And so Cristiano's not going to go and make a fuss about that.
Although you could see on his face, and then you can see that as he's walking out, he's thinking, okay, what I'm going to say, what I'm going to do. He knows that the camera is on him, and then obviously he put his coat on, and then Pirlo arrives, and you can see he goes like, oh, come on. And then you know he's fine. You know there won't be a clash like there could have been with Sarri, for example.
Sarri has a temper, and Pirlo's the great bearded stone face. So.
Of course, but I thought, as much as I love Barella, and he was key on the Inter goal, I just don't think he can do everything on his own. And when Juve has a very energetic midfielder like they had in that game, and I think McKennie is great at what he does well, I think it's difficult for Barella on his own to do something. And I think as Inter had chances in the second half and they could have scored another goal, and Buffon made a great save to redeem himself from the first goal, But I just think that there's still an issue for me in that midfield for Inter, and maybe Eriksen could have come on earlier. I don't know what you think.
We can't go back to the old Eriksen chestnut.
No, but well, you see what I mean? There was a point where, okay, that's where they lost the game for me.
I think it's also a lot easier for Inter to play when Lukaku's up front than when he's not. I think that actually makes the midfield better because you know most of the time you can just get in his general direction and he's going to at least hold it up and not lose it and do something useful to it. I wonder, you know, we've talked about Juve's progress. That said, and I know obviously there were some changes and it was the Coppa Italia, so there was a bit of squad rotation. But in the second half, I don't think they are where Pirlo wants them to be. Pirlo does not want to have them sit back and defend a lead. That is old Juve. That's not where Pirlo wants to be.
I agree with you. It looked like they stopped playing. They really did at halftime, and maybe they thought, okay, we're going to hit them on a counter and this and that. But it was a very dangerous game, I thought, that second half, because, again, that huge save from Buffon, if it's 2-2, it changes a lot for the second leg. So maybe in the way they have to control second halves and games by playing higher up, keeping the ball better, because they could not keep the ball in that second half. So, I mean, as we said, it's a work in progress. They still have a lot of work to do to improve. But going to San Siro like this, even in the Coppa Italia and winning the way they did in that first half especially, I thought was really positive.
Yeah, and I think it gives Pirlo sporting capital, it gives him credibility, and a lot of those people who were just, you know, really having a go at him early in the season, now I think it makes his message more powerful when he tries to talk to the players. Jules, I know you want to celebrate St. Gigi of Buffon.
Oh, I mean, it was a landmark because it was his 1,100th, is that what you say, how you say it, game?
1,100th.
Yeah, which I think is just, can you imagine? You've played 1,100 games in your. I'm not talking like youth levels and friendlies with your friend in the park on a Sunday. These are professional games. 1,100.
Yeah, and
it's just incredible. And you know, he's 43 and he still makes mistakes. And we saw in the first goal, but he's still capable of great saves, as we saw in that second half. Just turned 43. If he's out of contract in the summer. He will play his, like, what? He plays all the Coppa d'Italia. He played the last group stage games of the Champions League, which he did already last season. He will play, what, around 15 Serie A games against the
small teams? I think
small
a bit
teams.
Fewer than that. I think it depends where
last
they are.
Last season he did. I think he got 15 last season, all against teams that are in the second half of the table. So he will get to 25, let's say.
Yeah.
Which is enough for him.
Yeah.
Do you keep him?
I'm in two minds about this. So he came back because he wanted to set the record and be a good guy in the dressing room and whatever. Yeah. But then when you know that you're there to set the record, it puts pressure on the manager to give you games. And I kind of feel like that's a bit humiliating to the player. Like, oh, look, you're back and we're here to, you know, help you get the record. I would have preferred if he had gone to another team and just started every game where he's good enough to do it and let him be there on merit, not that he would have created the situation, but no, like he's been tremendous. I'm really curious to see what he does next, if he's going to retire, if he's going to try to have a go somewhere else. He's obviously fit enough, and you know, I think he can still play for somebody if he wants to play, if he enjoys playing. Or maybe just move into the, you know, into Pirlo staff if that's what you want to do, or find another role for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, because if he plays in March next year, so March 2022, he would become the oldest ever player to play in Serie A, which add to the other record that he has, like the amount of games because he beat Maldini and all of that. I think Balotta was 44 and something, so Gigi would have to wait a year.
But, yeah, you know, it's fine. Here's my take on records, as you know.
Yeah.
I wrote about, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo and the Pepe Bican column. It's up on the website.
I'm sure that went down well with Cristiano fans, no?
Well, the ones who took the time to read it, I think appreciated it. I think out of everything that he's accomplished, or, you know, and we don't even know if he's beaten this record or not, because people dispute the number of Colt Bican has. This is not an accomplishment. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
the goals Cristiano
course.
Scored, the effort. The record itself is not a real record. Cristiano is number one in there already because you're comparing apples and Aardvark.
But you know how footballers work, though. You know, for them, that's important.
This is not important. I don't think this is important.
No, for us, I'm sure it is.
Well, if you go to him, hey, Cristiano, here's your record. It's a nonsense record, and you probably already broke it. But here, break it again. You know,
but in the sense that
if this is what motivates him, fine. I don't think it is what. I think what motivates him is just to score and for his team to win. That's what he wants to do. I think that motivates him more. The rivalry with Messi, where he can compare himself to a contemporary, that might motivate him.
Yeah, probably. But also, if he beats Ali Daei records of
That is at least a more legitimate record.
No, I hear you. But still, imagine being the guy who scored the most goals ever in a career. Like, this is pretty cool.
It is, until you realize how contrived this is, because you're mixing international friendlies and international official games with cup games, and the other guy played during the war, and it was in the second division, and most people, what is this, this logic?
That's true,
I made the point in the article that, this isn't one of those iconic records like Cy Young in baseball or Don Bradman's test average, right?
Yeah.
This is something that, I think most people... And honestly, I write this in the piece. I'm quoting myself here. I think I'm allowed to do that. If you were familiar with Pepe, with Joseph Pepe Bican, before, a year or two ago, most likely, not definitely, but most likely, you're one of three things. You're either Czech, you're either a football historian, or you are a big fat liar. I mean, that is the reality. This record is not a thing, okay?
Yeah.
And Cristiano probably already holds it. And if he doesn't, he'll break it. And then Messi will come along and maybe he'll challenge it. Maybe he won't. I don't know. But let's move on from that. Final point on Inter, because this is a story that's bubbling beneath the surface and is boring and financial, which is why we're burying it here. But... Inter are owned by Suning, of course, this big Chinese conglomerate. There are issues back in China which aren't super clear, super transparent. Long and short of it is, under pressure from the Chinese government, they've had to reallocate some of their assets. With Inter, they've been hit by the pandemic. They've been looking for a partner, looking for investors. And at the same time, in parallel, they're also looking to raise money through the sale of bonds, to refinance these bonds that they have.
Yeah.
It's an enormous amount of money, matures next year. I think we're going to see more and more stories like this where, a club is run well, you've got an owner with deep pockets, but they can't just do what they want with their money.
Hmm.
And right now there's a lot of private equity and people like that who are around there sitting in piles of cash and saying, ooh, I want to get in on the game. And it feels weird talking about this. We should just be talking about the sport. But this is something that I think is very relevant. And I think it should give you cause to concern if even one of the biggest industrial conglomerates in the world, like Suning, one that is profitable and that has deep pockets, finds itself in this situation. Let's think a bit more about the stability of the game and the way we run the game. And I think that's something the authorities should be looking at. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough of that. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Manchester City make it 13 wins in all competitions, 9 in a row in the Premier League, 6 clean sheets in a row, and they're without their best player and best center forward. Jules.
It's really impressive, Gab, I have to say. They have so much momentum, so much solidity at the back, creativity in midfield, and even without Aguero, even with Gabriel Jesus, who
He's what he is.
He is what he is. I mean, he still scores important goals, I guess, but they're there. I mean, it's incredible. First team since Arsenal in 02 to win 13 in a row in all competition. It's
Laporte,
just,
left back. How about that?
Yeah, but we did say, remember, we did say, yeah. I think, a couple of games ago that at some point they will move to this, almost the 3-1-3-3 formation or something like that. And they've got so much more, I don't know, creativity and tactical knowledge than every other team in the league. It's incredible. It's remarkable.
And also, my own personal theory is that Kevin De Bruyne just got bored being so good. So yeah. He had his face surgically altered to look like Gundogan. And that's why Gundogan's playing so well.
Incredible.
No, we're kidding. Okay, you're doing really good. You're really
amazing. Lightning does strike twice, Gab. Southampton lose 9-0 to Manchester United after losing 9-0 to Leicester last season. Did we learn anything, though?
No, we didn't learn anything. It's, first of all, before we get into this, we talked before about when you see names you don't recognize on the bench. Mm-hmm. And this is a function. It's not just Southampton. A lot of teams have had these injury crises this season. Yeah. I don't know what I learned from a team that, has like 8 no-names on the bench. Or not no-names, but kids from the
young
team.
Players. Right?
One of these guys goes on the pitch. I know nothing about him. His name is Alexandre. Is he French?
Swiss.
Oh, yes, right. Yes. And Janovic's
cousin. Yeah, Alexandre. Yeah.
Gets a horrendous tackle early on. Scott McTominay gets himself sent off. Everybody says it's horrible, blah, blah, blah. I don't know this guy's mindset. I don't learn anything. Southampton to 10 men can't press. United do their part. Mm-hmm. They go, they score. People got bent out of shape. And people don't know what to talk about. So they talked about, Shea Adams, goal, the VAR. Come on, man. He's offside. You've had 18 months to dealing with VAR. You can't feign outrage now unless you're going to keep doing it every single week. What I did feel a bit unlucky was Bednarek. And I felt for Hasenhüttl. Now the guy's suspended as well. So that's another kid having to play. I don't know what Ole learned. I don't know what anybody learned.
No, just nothing. Good for your goal difference.
Good for your goal difference. Go. 3 more points.
Yeah.
Move on.
Yeah.
It was a wild game in the Copa del Rey between Barcelona and Granada. Jules, with 2 minutes to go, Barca were 2-0 down, and somehow they turned it around.
Incredible, guy. I mean, they were 2-0 down because they made 2 stupid mistakes defensively, as they often do, or at least not so much lately, but through the first part of the season, Umtiti twice, and then you think, oh God, this will be a setback losing to Granada.
And Sergino Dest penalty giving that away too.
Yeah, in extra time. But they turn around with Messi being exceptional. I mean, for someone who didn't score, to have such an incredible impact on the game is just, it's mind-blowing. Griezmann was good with a goal and a half, let's say, and 2 assists, Jordi Alba as well. And in the end, they won 5-3, which maybe I think this will do more for them, this win and this remontada, this comeback, than any other wins they've had this season under Koeman. And the dynamic is there.
I go back to this. We don't think Koeman's a rocket scientist. No. However, these players are playing for him, and they do care, and they have a lot of pride.
Yeah. Sticking with Barcelona, Ronald Koeman had a go at my boy, Angel Di Maria, for saying that Leo Messi could be on his way to PSG. I mean, even Angel Correa said that the door was wide open for Messi at Atletico Madrid, and he doesn't tell him anything, so whoa.
So, if you're a coach, it's a bad idea to reply to this unless you've seen the original context, the original quote. Now, you might know more about this than I do. As I understand it, Di Maria's contract is expiring, and he's basically saying, I don't know if I'll be back here, but wouldn't it be great if I was back here and Messi was here too? This is pretty much what he says.
His friend, exactly.
Right? He's not saying, Messi, come to us, ha ha ha. Like, the dude's not going to be offered a new contract, most likely, or if he does a big pay cut. What the hell does he care about Messi? Maybe Di Maria will go to Barcelona and join Messi there. Koeman, don't answer this. Don't bring up respect. Bring up respect when you've got managers talking about or club executives talking about your players who are under contract.
Which they don't
Not
do.
This.
Which players don't do.
Generally don't do, yeah.
Exactly.
Arsenal go down to 9 men and lose to Wolves 2-1. Jules, I thought everything was going great for like 40 minutes. And then the bottom falls out.
Yeah, the David Luiz red card, penalty combo.
They could have had 2 or 3 goals at that stage.
They should have been 3-0 up anyway. So that should not have mattered, in fairness, because they really played Wolves, who were in a really bad run of form anyway. They played him out of the park completely. And then they shoot themselves in the foot. And that's what happens. And then you lose 2-1 because Moutinho scores a great goal. And then you've got Leno sent off. And although
Leno trying to be sneaky?
Peeling. No, I think he misjudged the ball completely. He misjudges it completely. And then if he doesn't touch it, it's another goal. And maybe he thinks, you know what, it's still 2-1.
So what are they appealing? They're not appealing over Leno, are they?
They're appealing for the David Luiz.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for the David Luiz red card, not for the Leno one. Because this one, I think, I mean, I don't know. He's
I feel bad. He's unlucky. Know, too. He makes some of his own problems.
Let's just hope this is not like a setback. You know, they keep the momentum that they were before because things were really good, and that should not stop that. Chelsea play Tottenham on Thursday night, and we're recording this on Thursday morning. So Mourinho decides to spice things up with Tuchel.
Yeah, so they go to his pre-match and they tell him, like, ooh, it's so hard being a Chelsea manager. And I'm going to try to do his voice. I can't even quote him directly, but, you know, he said something like, I was Chelsea manager 2 times. I won the title. I won the title straight away. He kind of has a point. Like, it's not that weird to come in your first Chelsea season and win something, right? Antonio Conte did it. Ancelotti did it.
Not when you arrive in February.
No, I know. But, you know, then he'll be back. I mean, I don't... This whole thing is so difficult. You get paid a ton of money. You get to play some of the best players in the world. You get to live in West London. Not that difficult. Yeah. I don't have sympathy for Nagelsmann for Tuchel under that aspect. Yeah, yeah. But by the way, that's total Mourinho to go completely. And like throw a little stone.
Completely.
Paris Saint-Germain bounced back from the weekend embarrassment against Lorient by beating up Nîmes 3-0. Neymar starts hinting at a new contract again. Jules, you feel a bit better now, right?
Oh, such a good week, Gab. The Neymar, well, you know, up to now.
Let's wait till he signs.
Because there's a classic on Sunday, but Neymar agreeing with the club an extension, which is great, which we reported on.
Which he hasn't signed.
But he will sign it, which we reported on Tuesday afternoon. Then this win, they didn't play great. By the way, Neymar had a higher XG than PSG, but I don't care. I don't even want to think about it. They won 3-0, Kylian Mbappe scored, Di Maria was great. Nice little classic on Sunday against a Marseille team in crisis. So it's been better days than after the Lorient game. Borussia Dortmund beat Paderborn 3-2 in the DFB Pokal, the German Cup. But Gab, there is some serious VAR controversy there, again.
There is, but there shouldn't be. Paderborn player goes down in the box and they're tackled from Paslak. It takes VAR a few minutes to look at it, right? Ball goes up the other end, Dortmund score. And then the goal gets disallowed and called back for the penalty. It's not the first time it's happened. I know some people don't like VAR. It's normal. They applied the rules. It's the right thing that happened, the foul for the penalty. Live with it. But by the way, encouraging that Dortmund, once again, coming back, dealing with it, winning 3-2.
Conceding two goals, though.
Hey, they conceded three last year against Paderborn.
Yeah,
so.
True.
Eden Hazard is injured again for Real Madrid. It's the 9th time he goes down. Jules, is he cursed?
I don't know if he cares, but it's a nightmare gap for him. You have to feel for him. Even if you think it's a waste of money, if one of the worst transfer of the club history, I don't care. It's not his fault if he got those injuries all the time. And if Thomas Meunier almost broke his ankle 18 months ago when they played against PSG, it's just, no one wants to see this. And it's a real shame for him, for the club, for Zidane, for everyone.
But we're not making excuses.
No.
Real Madrid, we're holding you to account. It's not just Hazard. You have other players.
Yeah.
Zidane, make it happen now that you're fit again.
You can win
again,
without
okay?
him. You should. Right.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Leicester are still without Jamie Vardy, but they beat Fulham. Fulham. And they're third in the table. Gab, this is very much James Maddison's team, right?
So first of all, do not be mocking Fulham.
I'm not. I'm just saying.
Every team in the Premier League has played Fulham
And they're
this
second
season.
From bottom.
They're not particularly good. But still, it's another win. And the point is, not every team in the Premier League are third in the table.
True.
It's tremendous where Leicester City are.
Yeah.
Vardy's missed the last 3 or 4 games. But again, it's interesting, right? Our old version of Leicester, they're so dependent on Jamie Vardy. What are they doing? He's not there. When you're not there, Maddison takes over. This is his team. This is becoming James Maddison's team. And the way this guy is maturing in front of our eyes, I feel like I'm contractually obliged to mention Jack Grealish here as well.
Yep.
As two guys who don't play for big six clubs, but who are leaders, who are maturing, who have personality. We see kids get into the first team because of ability. And then the question is, can they knock it on and carry the team on their back? Grealish is doing it. Maddison is doing it. Well done.
Yeah, incredible.
More chaos at Marseille, when you thought it wasn't enough, as my boy Andre Villas-Boas, what did he do? He submitted his resignation, but then...
But then I think to make a point, the club decided to suspend him and to sack him. So I think that Marseille could become the first club ever, I believe, again, if there's been a precedent, hit us out on Twitter. Marseille could become the first club to sack a manager who'd already resigned, which I think is pretty remarkable. I think they want to make a point, maybe even ask him to pay some sort of damages fee or whatever, because they said that he tarnished the name of the club, the relationship he had with the club.
What did he do?
He basically resigned because he said, listen, I'm not in agreement with the sporting policy of the club anymore. The club signed Olivier Ntcham on loan from Celtic. I said no to that player. I didn't want to sign him, and they still signed him behind my back. I only learned him in the press on Tuesday morning. And this is not how I work. So I think as a principle, I can understand it. Although as a club, you also build a squad for whoever the next manager is, and they knew that AVB would not be there next season because his contract expired. But he said, you know what, I've had enough. I do think that he was looking for an excuse to leave. He didn't want to be there anymore. As you know, things went pear-shaped in terms of results. There was the attack from the fans on the training ground on Saturday.
And he scattered his papers all over the floor.
Yeah, and the tension between him and the board, him and the players, Payet, all of that. It was just a nightmare for him. It's a nightmare for everyone. It's an incredible crisis, chaos. And then they play PSG on Sunday.
Maybe Frank McCourt should come on our podcast and answer a few questions. Frank, yeah, come on.
If you're listening.
It's a quick question about this. Is with the resignation, not everybody knows this, right? A lot of times managers resign. But it's not like, oh, take this job and shove it. Like, they say they resign, but they're not really going to walk away if they're still under contract. They still want to get paid, right?
But he doesn't.
Do we know? So in André Villas-Boas' case, and Portuguese people will know, it has to do also with the kind of family that Villas-Boas is from. He actually resigned and was just walking away.
He just said, I don't want any money. I don't want anything from Marseille. I just want to leave. And they said no. They said, no, you're not going to walk away like this. So we're going to suspend you and make things difficult for you. And you're like, why?
Why would they do this? And also, if they suspend him, they still have to pay him, right?
Yeah. I think to make a point, maybe to shame him.
Frank McCourt, calling you out. Come on, man.
After playing 0 minutes all season at Manchester United, Jesse Lingard makes his debut for West Ham away to Aston Villa and scores twice, which is twice as many goals as he managed in all of 2019 and 2020. Who's laughing now, Gab?
Yeah, who's laughing now? Who's laughing at the Lingard now, huh?
Jay Lings.
Now, I got to say this.
Let's wait and see, man.
All right, whatever. I don't know if it's going to work out. But the amount of abuse, and look, I never particularly liked Jesse Lingard as a player. I just thought he was a bit silly and whatever. The amount of abuse Lingard got from England fans, from United fans, when he started, the cardinal sin of playing badly. And then a United, Solskjaer just puts him in a closet and makes him disappear, right? He didn't play a single minute this season.
Yeah.
You know, he sees Daniel James go on the pitch, but he can't even...
Something must have happened, don't you think? I don't know. Something must have happened.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I'm just happy with this guy. Who can come back and play,
can
score
play
a couple
football.
Of goals.
Exactly.
And shout out to your boy Sušek again, scoring again. He's just a
And what a great goal. It's not just a header on the corner. The movement is great. The finish is great.
This is the best goal he scored. Because the other ones, it's like, oh, look, big man in the box, causing trouble. But this one,
this is a proper,
Tickers, man.
From midfield. Oh, I love it.
Two wise men, Marcelo Bielsa and Carlo Ancelotti, squared off on Wednesday night. And it was Ancelotti and Everton who had the last laugh. Jules, they're sixth in the table.
And they needed that gap. They needed that after the disaster against Newcastle. And they played well. I mean, it's easier for you when Calvert-Lewin scores and he hadn't scored for a long time. And I think that's going
to
be...
We're not ready to call him Lewandowski again, are we?
No, but he's still young and he's still going to improve. But big win to go back on winning ways, go back on track. And for Leeds, it's still the same. They win, they lose, they win, they lose. But it was very entertaining, I thought. It was good. Not so much the Napoli and Atalanta game, Gab. 0-0 in the Coppa d'Italia first leg semi-final. But what does Rino Gattuso mean when he says that he only celebrates Mass once a week?
I have no idea. I think I had to get somebody to interpret this. Rino Gattuso is in danger of becoming like a parody of Rino Gattuso.
Like a man.
So now he starts saying... I think what he means is he's already... Because Napoli were really poor in this game. Atalanta dominated them. Yeah. Probably should have scored a couple goals. I think what he means is he's already been critical of his players before, and now he's not going to go and do this again. The problem is, when you speak in parables and stuff like that, A, you're a bit of something that rhymes with bosser, and B, you can come across that way,
yeah.
And B, sometimes people don't understand what the heck you're on about. So, you know, I want Napa to do well. I hope Reno's message is getting through. There are things going on behind the scenes that don't help. Chito Mantins, by the way, his I said the picture of his private plane
going landing back to Belgium for his recovery and
going off the runway or something. So, you know, there's stuff going on. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, you know, just call things like you say it and move on.
Yeah.
Guess who's back? Back again. It's Nicholas Anelka. Jules, did you miss him?
I did. I mean, the last time I saw him was on Netflix with his documentary, you know, and it was pretty entertaining. But now he's back as a sporting director for the fourth division club Hier in the south of France near Toulon, who was bought by Mourad Boudjelal, the former Toulon rugby club owner. And now he brought Anelka as a sporting director. So they're playing the fourth division. I don't really know what the ambition is, if it's to go up or stuff.
I can recommend Mourad if you're watching. I know Mourad is a frequent watcher of this program as well. Nicholas, you guys are watching. I can recommend somebody who is a fourth division scoring machine.
Can you
stay
now?
Tuned? He's going to come up very,
imagine
very soon.
If Engelmann signs in the south of France, that would be special. Looks like Roman and Dzeko are going to kiss and make up, Gab. But does he have to give up the armband, the captain armband?
Yeah, look, I told you, I'm on Team Fonseca.
Yeah,
on this
you
one.
Are.
Obviously, the two had a falling out. There was a whole debate. Does Dzeko need to go and apologize to his teammates? And look, they need him back. I'm sure he wants to play because he's old. The window's closed. He's not getting any younger. But yeah, I think if you're going to get into a physical altercation with your manager and your manager doesn't get sacked, you got to give up the captain's armband, especially your contract expiring. It, you know, give it to Pellegrini and move on. Nice to have a Roman captain in Rome once again.
Exactly. Once again.
But Dzeko's a phenomenal pro. We don't know what happened, but I think it's good for everybody if they move on. Jules, I bet you are very excited to see Ajax's record signing, Sebastian Haller, play in the Europa League when it returns later this month.
I am, Gab, because £25 million they spent on him. He's had a great impact already on the team. And I think with him, they have a chance of maybe winning the Europa League. Oh, wait. Oh, what happened? They forgot to put him on the squad list. I mean, someone is in trouble at that club. How can you forget to put your record signing, new signing, on your squad list for the Europa League?
I think Ajax are channeling their inner Roma.
Roma,
here.
Probably the guy went from Roma to Ajax.
Yeah, maybe transferred to Ajax.
Bayer Leverkusen are knocked out of the German Cup, but Rot-Weiss Essen, who are in the fourth division, Gab, we can criticize Peter Bosch again, and we did tell you that he was not very good. Or celebrate Simon Engelmann, who scored the winner.
You know what? I choose to be good. So I'm going to leave my criticism of Peter Bosch to one side for now. I'm fascinated by this guy, Simon Engelmann. I know nothing about him. I was told on the highlights, though, that he is the all-time leading scorer in the history of the German fourth division. Now, and he scored something like 130-odd goals. Now, and he's 31 years old. Now, I wonder, how does that work out? That if you score so many goals, wouldn't you want to move up a division?
Yeah.
Has he not had the opportunity? Somebody out there knows this. I've asked our researchers to look into it, but they're too lazy. So, if you on social media, if somebody knows the story of Simon Engelmann, why is he spent his entire career in the fourth division while he's scoring so many goals? Please let me know. We genuinely want to know. Right. Liverpool and City this weekend. Bish bash boss.
Juventus
huge.
Roma.
Juve Roma.
PSG Marseille. Oh my God.
Doesn't get any bigger, so we got to come back on Monday. Yeah. We'll do it then. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.